Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 7. Oh, how the time flies when you're having fun around these parts. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. And Payne, I know you've been dealing with hitting a wall as we get towards the midseason mark. Where do we stand on your status? I mean, are you questionable this week? Are you doubtful? Are you probable? Or are we going to have to officially rule you out?
Well, I'm here, right? So I can't be doubtful.
Well, you can still be doubtful, but I mean, you know what I'm getting at.
I'm here. We're at it. Week 7 NFL. Took a little shot before we got on here, and let's make a little magic.
Everybody needs some pep in their step as you get to the midseason mark. And we have a couple contest winners to announce, an interview with Dave Mason on the docket, of course, a best bet later in the show. But before we get to all of that, Payne, wanted to get your quick thoughts on what we saw unfold Monday night at Lambeau, where the Green Bay Packers, I mean, closed right around a 9.5-point favorite, saw professional money on the 49ers. But yet again, Aaron Rodgers in the waning moments, when the game means the most, he pulls a rabbit out of his hat.
That guy's good.
Might be the understatement of the podcast. We're only about a minute and a half in.
That guy's good. You know, kind of what we expected. I'm a little surprised how quickly San Francisco came out. It was clear they were all in on that game. I liked what I saw from C.J. Beathard. It's interesting, though, because I thought Shanahan got a little conservative late. Everyone busted his balls for not being conservative enough in the Super Bowl. Last few drives there, I didn't like what I saw there. C.J. Beathard got a little conservative, but I liked overall what I saw. The one thing on the other side of the ball is clear. That secondary for the Packers, if Jair Alexander isn't out there, there's not much speed in that back half. And they got exposed because of Jair Alexander being out, so they need him in there. I think they'll get a little healthier during the bye, and then we'll find out what the Packers really are, because that stretch of games coming up is tough.
Oh, they'll have their hands full, and it'll be a team we're talking about seemingly every single week with games against New England, the Rams, and it won't get much easier for Aaron Rodgers to put this team on his back and get him to the postseason, something they couldn't do a season ago with him being shelved for an extended portion of the schedule. Contest winners, though, Payne, not only do we have a weekly winner in our Bet the Board 5K football free roll, but we also had a winner in our 200th episode promotion. And man, that was about as close a race to the finish as you're ever going to find in a contest.
Yeah, so let's set this up. The Week 6 contest winner of our big pool that we're running goes out to M. Sargent. He was a perfect 5-0. Did win on a tiebreaker, and more so a technicality. So if you are listening to this podcast and you are in our season-long contest, you need to have a Twitter account. That's the only way we can contact you. In this week, there was a winner, and he does not have a Twitter account. He also used multiple entries. One entry. So I'm going to be tough on everyone here. If you have multiple entries, you're not going to win any prizes. One entry. If you don't have a Twitter account, you should get one now, because you could be out of the running for the season-long stuff. I would hate to see someone win the overall season and not have a Twitter account. Obviously, we need to contact you. That's the way we're going to do it if you win. So get those set up if you're in the contest and don't have a Twitter account. But not to take away, M. Sargent, the Week 6 contest winner. As for the 200th episode contest winner, you nailed it. It was dicey. It came down to the very last catch by Davante Adams. EK2003 is the winner of the 200th episode Monday Night Football contest. And we've ran these a couple times, Todd. We had one for the 50th episode, the 100th episode. There's some strategy involved. Do you go early, or do you try to give yourself an advantage by waiting to see what others pick and kind of audible off that? It became a catch-22 here. If you go early, you know, you're going to win the tiebreaker because you have the obvious, the pick in first. And that's what ended up happening here. So there's two people that had the 49ers over and Devontae Adams with 103 total yards. And EK got it in first. So he is the winner. There's another guy who had 49ers over and Devontae Adams with 134. So that last catch changed everything.
Always interesting to see how close these things are contested and some of the wrinkles we like to include in our contest. You need to be smart, you need to be skillful, but you also need Lady Luck to smile upon you to be able to take home some of the wealth of riches that we offer up. So congratulations to those fine listeners. As we say it all the time, and we'll continue to say until we get to our 2000th episode, Pain, cover your ears, and maybe even further past that. We appreciate all you guys do for us. Go over to iTunes, you know, rate the podcast. 5-star reviews go a long way, and we can continue to share the Bet the Board gospel with more and more sports bettors everywhere. I did mention Pain. We'll have Dave Mason to give us his book breakdown, but before we get there, we may as well jump into some of the biggest games of the weekend, and we can start early in the morning, even for those of you on the East Coast, with the Chargers taking on the Tennessee Titans in London. And when you look at this game, Payne, the Chargers, a 6.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total in this game, 45. I mean, we talked about it on the Monday podcast. Look ahead number had the Chargers around a field goal, you know, 3.5-point favorite. Inflation, given the fact that the Tennessee Titans offense, well, it looks to be a little bit anemic.
So much to unpack there. And not even just about this game. 2,000 episodes, did you say?
I mean, 10 years from now, we could be, you know, we can be growing old and gray together, producing some of the finest sports betting work in the space.
I don't know if my voice is going to hold up that long. I'm already struggling right now.
I mean, you're a content.
3 days
you
a
know,
week
whether,
is tough.
Whether or not you want to admit it, you're becoming a content guy.
My voice, it sounds like it sounds different today. Like, it's just beat up right now.
I mean, you got to get on this green tea and honey regimen. We got to get you drinking hot liquids. You got to take care of yourself, man.
It's brutal. You said something about the Tennessee Titans offense. It was ugly last week, obviously. And when you just look at, you know, in terms of adjusted net yards per play, this is the largest discrepancy of the entire week, Chargers-Titans. The largest of any Week 7 game. And I think it's primarily because of the Titans' offense. And it's been bad. And you can't really pinpoint what the exact issue is because, you know, right now it's everything. And, you know, you have an offensive line that isn't creating a lot of holes in the run game. They're 29th in adjusted line yards. We know last week, everyone's been talking about it, Mariota was sacked 11 times last week. And I think that's skewing some things a little bit. But with it incorporated, the Titans offensive line, 31st in adjusted sack rate. They had only given up, though, 9 in the previous 5 games. Derrick Henry, not going that well. Pouting a little bit, too, about not being the primary back. Outside of Corey Davis, not a lot of production from the receiving core. It's clear from what we've seen, I think, Todd, Delaney Walker is sorely missed. And to me, and I will piss a lot of people off, Mariota, by my estimation, has never been an elite passer. And so now he's dealing with the elbow finger issue. It's still hindering him to a degree. I know he's getting a little bit healthier. But then you have the fact that everyone's learning a brand new system under Matt LaFleur. And during this learning process, the Titans offense is doing it against a schedule that's the toughest in the NFL of opposing defenses. That's what I think is pretty scary here. When you try to figure out how they're going to attack the Chargers defense, I think it has to be, you know, on the ground. Corey Legit is back, and he has certainly helped LA's defense improve in the ground game. We've seen about a 5% increase in rushing success rate defense with him back just in 2 weeks. But I think you have to get that ground game going for Mariota. It allows him to probably use his legs a little bit more. If the ground game's going, you can roll him out. You can use play action. You can tell Mariota loves that. This is the one thing that I did find Mariota when he passes off of play action or a play action element or a play fake element, rather. He's completing 72% of his passes. That's 11.5% increase from when Mariota throws in there isn't a play action or a play fake element. So I think that's big to look for this week.
I mean, how bad are the things for the Titans? They've gone 8 straight quarters without a touchdown. Last week against the Ravens was their third game already this season without a touchdown. They've had 5 games with 220 or less passing yards. Marcus Mariota averaging less than 140 yards per game. And they've scored more than 20 points Payne once in a game all season, and they needed overtime to try and do that against the Philadelphia Eagles. Meanwhile, their opponent, they go on the road and they slow down some of the Baker hysteria. The Chargers starting to gel, a team that has 2 losses this season, only against the Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Rams. You mentioned the disparity in yards per play. We've talked about the dynamic duo that's starting to emerge with Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. But this defense, I still have some questions about the Chargers defense, but you made mention of a player that'll be back. Do you see room for improvement on that side of the ball, or what should we expect from the Chargers in this unusual travel spot?
Defensively, I think they are improving. They're getting some key guys back. Bosa, from what I'm hearing, could return after the bye. It's trending nicely there.
Nick or Joey?
What's that?
I said Nick or Joey Bosa. Who are we going to see on the field first?
Joey, okay. For sure. You know, they are getting after the quarterback. They're 7th in adjusted sack rate. That's probably the matchup everyone wants to talk about this week after the Titans defense gave up, or the Titans offensive line gave up all those sacks. So I do like what I'm seeing from the Chargers defense. It's continuing to get better. As you alluded to, the 2 losses, Rams and Chiefs, that was skewing some of those defensive numbers, right? When we were talking about the Chargers defense and thought they would just be one of the better units. But if you can get Bosa healthy in a few weeks, I think the numbers will start to even out after the Chiefs and Rams games start to balance themselves and you add more games to your schedule. So I like the way the Chargers defense is trending a little bit here. Offensively is really where they've been dynamic as well. I don't think Phillip Rivers is getting enough credit. He's been an absolute monster. I don't know what's going on. He's found the fountain of youth.
You know what it is, Payne? It's the fact that he gets to spend multiple hours a day away from his 37 kids at home and those car rides back and forth. It gives a man a chance to clear his head some.
He actually talked about how he misses his kids this week. He's said this has been a tough kind of road trip for him. It's been this camp atmosphere away from the family. He can't wait to return. And I would think, you know, if not for Patty Mahomes right now in his own division, I would think Rivers would be the leading guy for MVP. Now, you know, Matt Ryan's been awesome, but they're not winning games. He is on pace, Todd, for over 4,500 yards, 40 TDs, just 8 picks, completing 69% of his passes, averaging 9 yards per pass attempt. The dude's just been absolutely ridiculous. I can't see offensively here why the Chargers wouldn't have some success moving the ball. You know, the Titans, right now, I think they're pretty much average defensively, and they faced a really easy schedule of opposing offenses. The last 3 weeks, you mentioned before, the overtime game against Philadelphia. Included in that, the last 3 weeks, the Titans defense has spent 106 minutes on the field. Now they're, you know, going across the country. They are getting some positive news for that defense, I think. A couple of the linebacker situations, there are some injuries there, but it looks like Woodyard, Kenny Vaccaro, and Benny Logan all return to practice this week, so I think that's a good sign as well. The travel is probably something we want to talk about.
Sure, throw that travel element in there, because we've already spent more time talking about this game than anyone across the entire country will outside of the Nashville market.
It is the standalone game, first thing in the morning. So
actually, I have a question for you before we get into the travel. I mean, we talk about the Hawaii game on Saturday night being a degenerate special. Does this constitute a degenerate special because it's breakfast football of the truest form at 9:30 Eastern and 6:30 in the morning Pacific?
No. I mean, one, it's an NFL game, so I don't, you know, it's not like, you know, Hawaii where we're betting on kids, you know, that aren't going to be in the NFL taking dives. these are actually,
I got nothing on that note, by the way.
Weren't they going to, I mean, they were pretty close in the last few years to removing the entire sports program, were they not?
I mean, every now and again, corruption starts to infiltrate an athletic department. You have to make choices that are in the best interest of preserving academic and athletic integrity.
So when we're looking at Tennessee, LA here, you know, there's probably some opportunity. I would think this is going to be your classic Joes versus pros, right? There are going to be pros that are going to find value on Tennessee simply because the number, the change in just 1 week's time. So at seven, I could certainly see guys coming in, pros that are just value betting the dog here, just because that number has gotten a little out of touch. And I think when you start to dig into the outside elements off the field and the travel, that's possibly where you could find some of that advantage. I know Los Angeles has stayed in Cleveland this week.
Yuck.
They're going to head, away from their families for an entire week. Their bags were packed when they left last week. So they're apparently leaving Thursday night. They're going to land in London Friday morning, go straight into a practice. They've done their best to adjust the sleep schedules and practices this week in Cleveland to kind of mirror what they're going to be doing in London and the time the game's actually played, because obviously being a West Coast team, this game, I believe, is slated for like 1:30 a.m. body clock time for them. For the Titans, same kind of schedule. They're going to be traveling overnight. They get in Friday morning. They're going to have a practice that day and a walkthrough on Saturday. I know the Chargers apparently want to do some sightseeing from what I've read. So Saturday, they're going to do sightseeing instead of a walkthrough like the Titans. I could see after losing two straight games, right, and you get blanked at home, Titans coaches have kind of already came out and pre-apologized to fans saying, sorry to disappoint, but you're not going to see much of the players this week. Tennessee is taking this game very seriously. They're trying to mimic everything. And this is pretty funny, I was reading. They're flying over their team chef early so he can prepare regular meals. I kid you not. They've talked about like European eggs being different and spices and condiments being different. So they wanted all their regular foods. Ketchup was apparently the one condiment all the players needed over there, apparently.
Who knew that NFL teams are as finicky with their diets as you are? So, I mean...
Big ketchup fan.
Yeah, go figure. Well, you mentioned pros versus Joes, and I think this is the ultimate illustration of what we're going to see on Sunday. And it's the New England Patriots on the road at Soldier Field taking on the Chicago Bears. New England right now at betonline.ag, a 3-point favorite. This total 49.5. We've seen money come in on the dog and the under. I mean, Payne, this is, in my opinion, the prototypical example of football in 2018. You have an elite offense on one side in the New England Patriots coming in off a somewhat short week, having played in primetime against Kansas City, where the greatest thing since sliced bread. The Bears on the other side, an elite defense, number one in defensive efficiency, bounce back spot given how lethargic they were against the Dolphins. So many different handicapping angles to take here. The floor is yours, my friend.
All right, let's start with the Patriots offense. Against the Bears defense. I think that is interesting. And for me, and I'm an NFL guy, so I'm probably a little biased here, but this is the most intriguing game of the entire week in college or pro. Would you agree to that?
No, I will. I will actually will agree with you. I try not to sometimes, but I think there's so many different elements to try and figure out who these teams are that I would say, yes, this game can go a variety of ways and nothing of which would surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Patriots offense, they're starting to get healthier. The last 3 weeks, 38, 38, and 43 points put up on the board. All home games, obviously. Still 0-2 on the road. Edelman getting back into shape, it looks like. Gordon, getting a better understanding of the offense. Gronk still doesn't appear 100%, but he's trending better. It feels like everything is just kind of perfect now. But to me, this is the ultimate test for New England's offense. When you look at the defenses the Patriots have faced during this three-game win streak, Miami, Indianapolis, Kansas City, each of them are 18th or worst in the NFL in passing success rate defenses. Both Miami and Indianapolis are in the bottom third in explosive pass defense. Both Indianapolis and Kansas City are well below average in defensive rush efficiency. You kind of get the point here. And when I look at the Bears defense, they were pretty sluggish last week, obviously, and Miami. Despite that, they're still number one in defensive efficiency. This is by far, I think, the toughest test New England will have to date, for sure. Vic Fangio, you do some reading, he was embarrassed last week. Chicago's defensive players, they were embarrassed last week. Khalil Mack, I know he's dealing with the ankle, that was the worst performance of his entire career when you look at the grade for the game. And Todd, I think at this point, certainly our listeners do, I'm probably a touch too critical of coaches and players, so I hate to give teams passes, but I think there's a lot of excuses that are valid for last week. You have the Bears defense, I think they just melted in the sun. We talked about this, we texted back and forth. There's 102 degrees on the field. We were joking around about someone we know wearing a suit on the sidelines.
Tough gig, and just tough balls. Gig to try and throw that dark suit on in 102 degrees sweltering heat and humidity.
And the interesting hidden factor here was Dowell Loggins. He's the former Bears offensive coordinator turned Miami OC. He knew Vic Fangio's defense inside and out. He spent multiple years with them on the same staff. He knew exactly how to attack Fangio's defense. And I also think the changeup or the curveball helped. I know we laugh about Brock Osweiler, and trust me, he's not good, but he's an NFL quarterback. And Gase and the Dolphins did a very good job of hiding Tannehill's injury. I promise you, the Bears did not prep one time for Brock Osweiler that entire 2 weeks. It was all about Ryan Tannehill, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, and it showed. I mean, you mentioned some of the things the Patriots have done. The longest streak of 35-plus point games for them since 2014. But it comes with the caveat, as you mentioned. They do it at home. We know the Patriots are much more dynamically inclined when they play in their own building than when they take things on the road. Some of the struggles. Khalil Mack, do we expect him to be at 100% dealing with that ankle injury? I know he hasn't missed a game since he was drafted by the Raiders back in 2015.
He's a gamer. I would expect him to be, I don't know if he's gonna be 100%, but he's gonna be out there, and I think he'll probably have a bounce back game. I would think. Marcus Cannon dealing with a little bit of an injury as well there, so you want to monitor that for the Patriots offense. He is a key cog, the right tackle there. So I would think we're going to see Khalil Mack for sure.
We're on the other side of the ball. Mitchell Trubisky, 9 touchdown passes the last 2 weeks. He had 9 prior in his NFL career the 15 weeks beforehand. So you put a little asterisk there. The Patriots have held their last 3 opponents to under 100 yards rushing. We know New England's mantra is bend but don't break. Have you seen enough from their Bears offense under Matt Nagy's leadership to lead you to believe they can put together long, sustained 8 to 10 play drives? They'll get the likes of Taylor Gabriel involved, Allen Robinson, Tariq Cohen, and the missing link Jordan Howard. I mean, how do we think that matchup's going to unfold, the Bears offense against the Patriots defense?
There was a lot of disdain in your voice when you said the missing link there, Jordan Howard.
Don't get me started on how Jordan Howard is trying to single-handedly ruin what otherwise would be an elite fantasy roster I've compiled.
You love talking fantasy all of a sudden.
There's a little bit of bitterness in my voice, Payne. I need to get it out there somewhere. All right, I'm done with the fantasy rant.
You know, I think we're all a little unsure of what this Bears offense is with Trubisky operating it. You know, one thing's pretty clear. Matt Nagy is a world-class offensive mind. The stuff he comes up with weekly is next level. Last week, there was even some great stuff that I watched. I mean, the Dolphins had no clue how to defend it. It was awesome. And because of Matt Nagy, you're looking at Chicago's offense. They're 14th in overall offensive efficiency. And to their credit, it's come against a schedule of opponent defenses that's above league average. So I think there is some hope here. When you try to project, I think that's always the biggest thing. You want to compare apples to apples. So, you know, New England's defense, it's not going to be a shock to the Bears system, I wouldn't think. They've faced tougher opponents on average this season. When you look at what New England's doing, certainly they've always have that bend but don't break mantra. They want to hold you to field goals. So a lot of their efficiency numbers don't look great. 19th in defensive efficiency, 23rd in passing success rate defense, 20th in yards per play allowed adjusted for opponents. So again, I don't know if this is a shock to the Bears offensive system. Obviously, you know, the key here is Trubisky not being baited or duped into mistakes, which is certainly a possibility. The other intriguing underlying thing here, I believe, is Matt Nagy. He was with the Chiefs in recent years. He's been a key cog to that Chiefs offense. They've beaten Brady and Belichick 2 of the last 3 matchups. His Chiefs offense, when he was there, hung 41 and 42 in 2 of those 3 meetings. I'd also bet large money this week that Nagy has spoken with or will speak with Andy Reid this week extensively and discuss this specific matchup with Reid, who just faced New England days ago, right? Like, they're buddies, number one, but this is mutually beneficial for all parties. This is a huge swing game for the Bears season, and then Chicago beating New England can certainly help Kansas City potentially having home field advantage throughout in the playoffs. So I believe that's a real thing here.
There's no doubt about it. It would give Kansas City a huge leg up. They already control the potential to have an inside track for home field advantage, and it would go a long, long way if you combine a Chiefs victory over the Bengals with a Bears victory over New England. You look at some of the numbers around these two teams. New England, we know they're road warriors. 15-3 straight up the last 18 on the road, 13-5 against the spread in those 18 games. But the Bears, they've been making people money when they play at Soldier Field. The last 17 times they've played in their own building, 12-5 against the number. And Payne, I'm going to break a little bit from tradition on the next game, since typically when we do this podcast, we go in betting index order. But with the Chiefs-Bengals game flexed to Sunday Night Football, we're going to go into a game that I think a lot of people will be surprised even made our short list this week, and that is the Minnesota Vikings traveling to MetLife to take on the New York Jets. The Vikings right now, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, do have to lay $1.30, so a de facto 3.5. Total in this game, 46.5. And I think the most logical place to start for me handicapping this one, Payne, is the Jets injury report. 18 of 53 Jets appeared on the report, and it's guys that have as much impact as Quincy Enunwa, you know, Robbie Anderson, Terrell Pryor, Marcus May, and the list goes on and on. Can the Jets field a complete 53-man roster this weekend?
First of all, you took a jab at the game selection. What other game would you have picked?
No, that's what I'm saying. It was somebody's a little testy over there and sensitive. It had nothing to do.
I was listening to Adam Gase's presser post game, and last week he's really got me fired up.
We just didn't have enough options. I mean, when we went through trying to find.
But I think this is intriguing.
The best six games.
You have a Vikings team that everyone thought was going to be really good, and you have Sam Darnold and a New York team that's trending nicely.
You know, I think a lot of people are disappointed that you didn't get into a Brock Osweiler breakdown against the Detroit Lions defense. I think that's the real wrench that our listeners have come to expect from you in this.
Oh, man. This would be so tough if Brock Osweiler is the quarterback for the next few weeks, which is a real possibility. So, you mentioned the injuries. The Jets are certainly beat up on both sides of the ball. Let's start with their defense and the Vikings offense. Doesn't this feel like a weird spot for the Vikings? I know they've attracted a little money on the screen at 3. I don't know if I'm going to be on the game. I saw a little money come back quietly yesterday off the screen on the Jets. It's just, you know, the Vikings are on the road. They're away from the dome, non-conference game. You get the Saints on deck. Like, what are we seeing here from the Vikings? I'm not quite sure. You mentioned the Jets' defense. It is banged up. Has been for a few weeks. You lost 3 key cogs in the secondary for significant time throughout the course of the last couple games. Trumaine Johnson, Buster Screen, May. I mean, it's 2018. When you lose 3 guys in the secondary, it's going to be trouble. The numbers are certainly trending poorly the last 3 weeks. Jets have allowed 6.4 yards per play, 7th worst in the NFL. And they faced Denver's offense, which has sputtered a bit, the Colts' offense, 23rd in efficiency, and the Jaguars' offense, 26th most efficient offense. So the last 3 weeks, with all those injuries in the secondary, doesn't look good, and now you have a Vikings offense. Very efficient passing game. Cousins, Thielens, Diggs, obviously, on the season, 52% of the Vikings' passes have graded successful. The last 3 weeks in that same time, Jets defense allowed 51% of passes to grade successful. So there's going to be some success here through the air. This total has trended off the 47, and I think mostly because some of the offensive injuries, but it's MetLife Stadium. There's supposed to be like 17-mile-per-hour winds at kick. Something to watch as game time approaches. I know all the trend guys, you know, once you get weather or wind over 15 miles per hour, you know, the trend show, you know, you look under. I'm not sure that's the way I would be looking. Certainly, again, the way the market's trending. Delvin Cook practiced in full yesterday, which is a great sign. I would think if you're practicing in full on a Wednesday that he's going to get back in the game. I would think that helps the Vikings offense be a little bit more balanced. Not a shock. He is returning after Latavius Murray's show out game last week, I wouldn't think.
Go figure. If you need a little extra added incentive and reason to get yourself back into the mix, Minnesota running for 195 yards against the Cardinals behind Latavius Murray, that probably becomes the catalyst. But you mentioned the Vikings' inability to run the football consistently. Number 28 in the league, averaging less than 90 yards per game, putting a ton of pressure on Kirk Cousins, which in this game, as you mentioned, with the Jets so banged up defensively, especially in their secondary, it might be a good thing, weather permitting. I look at Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs as about as good a duo as you're going to find in the league. 98 catches so far this season, over 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns. Thielen has to be licking his chops, matched up against the Jets. Do we think this number, I mean, you mentioned seeing two-way action on this. We think it closes in that 3.5 range or 3, and then the total continuing to trend down, I would imagine, if there's those 15 to 20 mile an hour gusts expected?
This is so tough for me because that Jets injury report is so large. If suddenly all those guys start dropping like flies, you know, probably trends up a little bit. I just don't like the spot. And I like what I've seen from Sam Darnold. I don't really love what I'm seeing from the Vikings defense. And I think that's the big thing here, right, for the Jets offensively. I know we've kind of talked about this off air, but we probably can bring it to light now at this point. The market's catching up a little bit. I just, you know, I like what I'm seeing from Sam Darnold. Obviously, he's going to make some rookie mistakes. Played 27 college games, only started 6 NFL games. You know, you look at some of his metrics, they don't look great. You know, adjusted completion percentage, he's 29th among qualifiers. He's got a 48 passer rating when he's under pressure. So there's still a ton of work to improve on, I would think. But look at who he's faced. He's faced one of the toughest defensive schedules in the NFL, 5th toughest, 3 defenses that are top 9 in efficiency. When you back out those 3 games and you focus on the other 3 teams Darnold's faced, which is Detroit's defense, Denver's defense, Indy's defense, 55% of Sam Darnold's throws have graded successful. Just a ridiculous clip. Jets offense has hung 30 or more in all 3 of those games. And this defense that they're going to see this week in the Vikings is living on reputation, on perception. Reality is the Vikings defense 20th in defensive efficiency. Secondary, 22nd in passing success rate. They've allowed 26 explosive passes in 6 games. I think there's going to be opportunity here for Sam Darnold in the offense. You would like to have his full complement of weapons, and that's what I'm kind of waiting on to see. We know Anunua, we discussed on Monday, you brought up, which is a good point. That's kind of been his security blanket. He's out with the high ankle sprain. Robbie Anderson somehow made his way onto the injury report after missing Wednesday's practice. So, you know, you do want to monitor that situation, but I would think if the Jets' offense is healthy enough, they're going to have some success here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see either of these defenses doing a ton to slow down one another, but hey, I've been wrong before and I'll be wrong again. This game, very interesting to teach us quite a bit, I think, about both these teams going forward. If that game will teach us about 2 teams, Payne, I think we know quite a bit about the next 2 teams we're slated to discuss. And maybe a Super Bowl preview if things were to break the right way with the Ravens playing host to the New Orleans Saints. The Saints come in off the bye. The Ravens, a 2.5-point favorite. You do have to lay a price as this number trends towards 3 at betonline.ag. Total in this game looks at 50. And I think for me, a lot of people go, oh, we really want to see the Saints offense, that high-powered unit, Drew Brees, record-setting performance the last time we saw him against the Redskins, against the Ravens defense that ranks top, you know, 2 or 3, if not number 1 in most of the key metrics. But for me, Payne, it's the other matchup that I'm more intrigued by. That Saints defense, it's been elite stopping opposing running attacks against a new-look Ravens offense. And, of course, it's the Willie Snead revenge game.
Yeah, you might be the only one that wants to see that matchup. I think that's what makes this game so intriguing. And, you know, when you're looking at Saints offense versus Ravens defense, it's good on good. Ravens offense versus Saints defense, you know, leaves somewhat to be desired, that matchup. I like this Baltimore offense, I think, better than most. I know the success rate metrics don't really depict an offense that's better than average, but when you factor in everything, look at the overall efficiency of this Ravens offense. They're 13th, and they've played the 3rd toughest schedule of opponent defenses. So this should be a step down in class, I would think, for the Ravens offense. It'll be fun to see kind of who imposes their will in the trenches, because as you mentioned, that Saints defense stopping the run has been very good, but Baltimore is one of the most physical teams in the NFL. They just want to beat you up. But right now, Saints defense, just 40% of rushes have graded successful, but you can beat them through the air. 55% of throws have graded successful there. Once Patrick Robinson went out on the IR, there's nobody opposite Marshawn Lattimore, who himself is having a down year, I would think, compared to his rookie deal, his rookie year.
Speaking of Lattimore, by the way, do we think he's going to be out there dealing with the concussion?
Yes. Okay. It looks like he practiced in full yesterday on Wednesday. I would think here, when you look at this, Baltimore can probably move the ball a bit through the air. I think what you're looking for is, can the Saints defense get pressure on Flacco? So far, opposing defenses have only pressured Flacco on 24% of his dropbacks. But if you can get there, Joe hates pressure. 25th best quarterback when the heat is on. So Can the Saints stop the run? Can they get pressure on Flacco? If they can, the Ravens' offense becomes below average. So far, no one's really been able to stop the Ravens' ground game, and no one's really been able to get pressure on Flacco. So that'll be the matchup here to watch.
And the ground game hasn't been explosive by any stretch of the imagination. It's what I would define as serviceable, but I think, Payne, which speaks volumes about Baltimore and where they have to continue to be successful, especially against an elite offense like the Saints, is in converting third downs, where the Ravens have done that 47% of the time, good enough for third in the league. And as a result, they're number two in the league in terms of average time of possession, which allows the defense that brought pressure last weekend on Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans to potentially do that. But when you look at the way the Saints offense will be this week, Mark Ingram, he looked good and fresh, as you mentioned he would in his return against the Redskins. The receiving core, we're starting to see a few guys emerge opposite Michael Thomas. If you're Baltimore defensively, how do you go about scheming to at least slow down New Orleans, because you know you're not going to completely clamp down?
No, you can't. And this is what this is why this game's so interesting, because this is good on good. And, you know, you have an elite offense against an elite defense. I think we'll find out just how good each of the units truly are, because neither has been tested. You know, the Saints' electric offense, they face the easiest slate of opponent defenses. For the Ravens, they're number one in both rushing and passing success rate defense, but they've faced the fourth easiest schedule of opposing offense. Something's got to give here. I think I want to buy the Ravens' defense more than I am the Saints' offense in this spot, right? Outdoors, away from the dome, 15-mile-per-hour winds. The last 30 trips on the road for the Saints, they've just won 10 straight up. And you mentioned pressure. Baltimore bringing it. Can they pressure Drew Brees? Through 6 weeks, when Brees isn't pressured, completing 83% of his passes, 86% of his deep throws. So he's just been electric. You have a Ravens defense, though, second in adjusted sack rate, seventh in pass rushing. If you can create pressure against Drew Brees, and it's key that it comes specifically up the middle, that's one spot where you can make Drew Brees uncomfortable, because he's got to slide left or right and then reset before delivering the ball, because he's just 5'11". He has a tougher time throwing over that pressure when it comes directly at him. And you can roll the tape. Go back to the Browns game. Pop on the All-22. I'm going to butcher the guy's name. Larry Ogunjobu, I believe his name is. He gets pressure all game right up the middle. And relatively speaking, it gave Drew Brees a much tougher time. It was probably one of Drew Brees' worst performances of the entire season, relatively speaking, against the Browns defense, because Larry did such a fantastic job getting pressure right up the middle in his face, forcing Brees to move off his spots.
You think in this game, Payne, with the number where it sits right now, you'd see some resistance with the Saints? I know we're going to talk to Dave Mason. I'm curious to see where the public has come down on this game. But do you think at three, the professionals would have an appetite with the dog? You mentioned the Saints' struggles away from the dome in terms of straight-up record, but this team's still 12-5 against the spread the last 17 on the road.
Yeah, they have had some good success against the spread on the road, and I think a majority of it is the market pricing them a little incorrectly, right? We all talk about them being outside the dome, and sometimes you get a little inflated prices. Certainly off the bye week, they get a little bit healthier. 2 weeks to prep, 2 weeks to prep for a guy like Sean Payton is a lot. Baltimore's first home game in nearly a month. So, you know, you deal with all the home activities when you first get back.
Bruce Irvin type home activities, or like other domestic home activities?
You know, you got to shop, you got to please the wife and do all those kind of things. So here's what's interesting. Money on Baltimore early in the week, it is the professional side. I do think once we get to three, there could be a different element of in a different group, a different mindset of professional bettors that say, hey, we have to grab the three here. When I look at my power number, three is the spot on number here. I'm big on the Ravens this year. Their home field advantage, you're giving it more than the accustomed 2.8 right now. They're 3.5 for home field advantage. So I think that's potentially where my numbers are going to differ than some other bettors, just because I think the Ravens are a little better than people think, and I think their home field advantage probably isn't incorporated enough.
I mean, I think, Payne, when we look at the games, and we talked about the Bears-Patriots being fascinating when it's strength on strength, this game will do the exact same thing in the afternoon time slot. So going to start to learn an awful lot about teams from these cross-conference showdowns, NFC against AFC, and figure out where the balance of power may lie if we had any questions, at least through first 7 weeks of the season. Into the Sunday night game where it has been flexed, and you're looking at Kansas City. What are you laughing about over there?
It's a big game Sunday. The NFL knew what they were doing. When Todd's favorite quarterback rolls into town, you show him some damn respect and flex that
you're
bitch
damn
to prime
right.
time.
Andy Dalton and his 3-15 overall record in Sunday night football rolls into Arrowhead.
Did have a big primetime win on Thursday night earlier in the year.
They did against a team they own in the aforementioned Baltimore Ravens. The numbers here in this game paint Kansas City a 6-point home favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 58. I mean, we've seen a limited sample size for both of these teams. Do we know who the Bengals are at this point in the season, or do we have a better read on who Kansas City is now and who they're going to be going forward?
I think we definitely know more about Kansas City. I have no clue what this Bengals team is. I can't figure it out. I'm really having a tough time because we talked last week, and it was, hey, pretty fortunate to be 3-1. Pulled some rabbits out of the hat. Defense has some issues. And then last week, they kind of lay an egg at home in a division game. Game wasn't as close as the scoreboard. Only gained 4.7 yards per play. So I don't know what the Bengals are right now.
I mean, this is a team defensively that, I mean, is a dumpster fire. Vontaze Burfict aside, trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, you look at these two defenses, Payne, honestly, and it cracks me up. The Bengals, number 28 in the league in pass defense, number 25 in sack rate. They're 29th in total defense, and they're 31st in terms of getting off the field on third down. We've talked at great lengths until we're blue in the face about Kansas City, number 31 in pass defense, number 20 in sack rate, 32nd in total defense. But the one thing the Chiefs can do, and we saw a little bit of that against New England, at key downs, they have a knack for getting off the field and getting the ball back for their high-powered offense.
You know, when you're talking about the Chiefs' defense, I guess you are correct. They are good in spots. And the Orlando Scandrick thing, you know, they kind of luck-boxed into him and plucked him out of nowhere. I mean, the Redskins paid him $1 million to go away. And
can you
there's
pay me
multiple
$1 million
teams
to go away?
Probably, I don't know if it'd take that much.
$27. So if listeners out there want to take up a collection, you'll get more pain all the time if you pay me to go away.
So, you know, the Orlando Scandrick thing is interesting because he's been their best corner. He's certainly played well the last 5 weeks, hasn't given up a touchdown. There was multiple teams that brought him in after he got shit-canned and paid to go away by the Redskins, and they were all teams with corner needs, obviously, the Dolphins being one of them. They all worked him out, didn't sign him. Now, all of a sudden, short sample, but he's been, you know, the best defensive back for Kansas City. For me, and we're going to just pound this, I think, it's simple. Like, the Bengals are going to have to keep pace offensively. You know, they can't go into Arrowhead and do what they did last week against the Steelers. 4.7 yards per play at home is embarrassing. That's not going to cut it. That number is going to get you blown out here. I think it's positive that other weapons are starting to emerge. Tyler Boyd's been fantastic. John Ross practiced all week. He is somewhat healthy, obviously, at this point. Be nice to have him back. If you're Marvin Lewis and Bill Lazor, I don't know why this is such a tough concept. Just copy what you just saw from Bill Belichick. It's going to be smarter than anything you can do. Like, you just saw him put 43 points up on the board. Just copy it. I mean, maybe even just copy every single play they just ran. I don't get it. And the one thing that we did see last week, when you put 43 on the board, you're thinking 2018, we've just thrown it all over the park. That wasn't the case. Patriots ran it 38 times, passed it just 35. Joe Mixon has to have 25-plus carries in this game. And I think it's not only just, you know, the game plan, because that's going to work, but Joe Mixon's been really good. He's been really efficient. 7th and yards above replacement adjusted for schedule. And we know the Chiefs' inability to stop the run. And I think we're going to continually talk about this and stress it because it keeps getting worse every single week. After the Patriots game, the Chiefs are now allowing 62% of runs to grade successful. That's dead last in the NFL. 15% worse now than league average. The Chiefs' defense dead last in allowing explosive runs. 19% of all runs against the Chiefs' defense, they grade explosive. If you can get the ground game going, and you have an accurate game from Andy Dalton, who's picking up third downs when needed to extend drives, I think you have a shot here. Justin Houston, still dealing with the hamstring, hasn't practiced yet this week. I'm hearing the Chiefs, from their respected beat writers, they claim they want him 100% before he returns. So I think that's going to be an interesting element here. I don't know what the Chiefs are going to do defensively. You know, they don't really get after the quarterback with Houston down, right? That downgrades two positions. We talked about how good Dee Ford's been, but you can now, once Houston's out, you can double Dee Ford. You can chip him with a running back. You can throw the tight end and line him up on that side of the field for help. They couldn't really get to Brady last week. He was only pressured on 21% of his dropbacks. That's got to change, I would think, this week. You got to get some pressure on Andy Dalton.
You know who my hero is in this campaign? It's Carlos Dunlap of the Cincinnati Bengals, who said this: anytime you want to be one of the great ones on defense, or you want your defense to have a statement type game, you have to do it against the best offenses in the league. And right now they're putting up those points like they're one of the best offenses in the league. So you've got to go out there and put it to them. Hey, Carlos Dunlap, if you're out there listening to the podcast, if you put it to Kansas City's offense this week, I'll tip my hat to you and not see anything negative about the Bengals for at least 2 weeks.
Is that the Dunlop tire guy?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I mean, the way that this Bengals defense got ran over last week, I mean, the tires might have helped. It would have left less of a mark than what the Steelers were able to do to them on their home field.
Listen, they're terrible. And, you know, I think we know what the Chiefs' offense is. It's elite, and it becomes unstoppable when mistakes aren't made. If Patty Mahomes doesn't make those mistakes, I don't know what the Bengals defense can do here, honestly. Right? You're looking at this Cincinnati defense. It's regressing. 24th overall in defensive efficiency. They have faced an elite schedule of opponent offenses, top 10 in that regard, but you're getting one here as well. You know, the Bengals allowing nearly 6 yards per play adjusted for opponent. They're bottom third in the league in both defensive rushing and passing success rate. They're below average in explosive runs and pass defense. And now you're dealing with some injuries. Nick Vigil, who's the Bengals' coverage linebacker. Without him, who's covering Travis Kelce? He's been their best cover linebacker. He's 202 snaps in coverage this year. No other linebacker on the roster is close to that. And I think more importantly, Vigil's also the Bengals' defensive signal caller. He gets guys in position. So that's a tough loss. Supposedly he's going to be out about a month with the MCL. You add to the fact Darquez Dennard left the stadium Sunday with a sling on his arm. Sean Williams going through the concussion protocol. That's three defensive starters. You're going to want to monitor the last two, obviously. But if they're all out, this could be really ugly. I don't know what you do here. You know, you got to get some type of pressure, force Mahomes into a mistake or two. The Chiefs right now, number one offensive line adjusted sack rate, so you can't really get to them either. That could change a little bit. I know their starting guard is out for this one. Mitch Morse, their starting center, left the New England game with concussion, so he has to clear protocol. Maybe that's a glimmer of hope if he can't go, but you certainly want to monitor that if the Chiefs starting center's out.
Yeah, I can tell you one thing. I know books are going to need the Bengals, and we'll get Dave's take on that. Actually, sooner rather than later, as we have Dave Mason waiting in the wings to offer the sportsbook perspective and either add or detract from some of the game breakdowns you've heard from us already. He joins us every Thursday right here on the Bet the Board podcast to talk all things National Football League. You can, of course, follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, well, I don't know exactly how the entire NFL weekend during the course of week six played out. I have to imagine the 49ers covering rather comfortably on Monday night was a nice bow on top of everything else.
Yes, that was a big game. Definitely. It was a good weekend. Decent, I would say. I thought it would be a little bit better, to tell you the truth. Looking at the results, I was a little surprised. The numbers weren't as good as I envisioned them. Yeah, the house, Chiefs was huge. 49ers and Dolphins were the biggest. And the players, Eagles, finally playing good, I guess. Falcons and Steelers were the best for the players. So, overall, good weekend. On to week seven.
And Dave, week seven, what's it looking like right now on early sharp action? Anything ramping up with public liabilities? I'm sure that game being flexed to Sunday night with the Kansas City Chiefs wasn't overly appealing for you guys.
Yeah. As far as sharp is confirmed, or as far as sharp goes, we're talking tonight we got a little two-way sharp action. Cards plus 2.5 and Broncos minus 1 are both sharp. Ravens minus 2.5 is sharp. Bears plus 3.5 is sharp. Eagles minus 4. Buccaneers minus 3 flat or better. And Vikings minus 3, minus 115 or better. As far as the public is concerned, Broncos 77% tonight, 85% on the Chargers, 82% on the Patriots. Chiefs 78%, 80% on the Vikings, 67% on the Saints, and 71% on the Falcons. So there will be a lot of sweats this weekend as usual.
Safe to say, Dave, that come Sunday night, I imagine Bengals and under would be the optimal scenario in prime time.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, I'll bet my paycheck on it. So you ain't going to win much, but I'll bet it anyways.
Yeah, it's interesting to try and see a lot of these primetime games go flying over the total. I imagine they have to be a thorn in some of the book sides. I mean, everywhere you look, people are just trying to blindly bet these things over. And then when you get some of the marquee teams, obviously Kansas City in back-to-back weeks, it puts you guys between a rock and a hard place.
No, absolutely. And that's probably a big part of why we didn't win as much as I thought we did last weekend. You know, I'm taking 90% of the time, I'm just taking all the spread stuff into account. But these totals are getting bet more. You know, I've noticed it this year, like, holy, you know, there's as much on a Monday night total as there is on a 1 or 4 o'clock spread, even more sometimes. So that probably has a lot to do with it, why I was a little surprised that we didn't win as much as I thought we did, because, you know, these overs are in prime time are just beating us up.
Have you guys seen some sharp action coming back on these totals as they get up there? It's more like we talked about a few weeks ago. Hey, just take the stand, and we're going to let these public bettors continue to lay through these prices because we don't want to create value for some of the pros.
No, we have taken some. I think there was some sharp on the under the other night. I forget, either Sunday night or Monday night. I can't remember which, to tell you the truth. But no, we have seen some sharp action, but they're flying over, man. It's a video game out there these days.
The fantasy football culture we live in, there's no doubt about it. Points, they come, and they come in bunches, especially with some of these offenses and the marquee players that are out there.
Are you trying to ask about my fantasy football team again? Or was that a segue
I'm not trying to bust my balls
this week, buddy, because you brought it up. You brought that word up.
You know, I threw it into the discussion, but it wasn't an open invitation for you to go through and appeal to Payne's sensibilities for a stardom sit-em type of segment around these parts.
We've already designed the segment. It's called Fantasy Flex Friday. So, Dave, every Friday, we're just going to have you come on a podcast on Bet the Board, and you just give out flex positions for us. That'd be
awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. I'm all over.
I can see that. Like, Dave's face cut over like a bodybuilder, like Jay Cutler or Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day, and it's Dave Flex Friday.
Don't need the cutout. I don't need the cutout.
Pretty impressive then, my friend. Pretty impressive. All right. But if folks are looking to try and get in on some of the fun, the earliest openers in both college and pro football anywhere at betonline.ag. You talked about the NBA season cranking up in earnest, early bets there, you know, low dime lines available for hockey bettors. How can they get in there as first-time depositors, or if folks just may want to bump up those accounts and reload a little bit?
Roger that. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Again, that's betonline.ag. Use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to get a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account but have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% sportsbook bonus. Max bonus is $1,000. Terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Always fun getting your take, Dave, on the NFL weekend that rapidly approaches. We'll be rooting for the Cardinals around these parts for you tonight, and we'll hope that game Sunday night between the Chiefs and Bengals finds a way to stay under the total. For those listeners, you can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Dave, thanks as always for your input, my friend.
All right, fellas, have a good weekend.
Interesting stuff from Dave talking about how people are coming in hand over fist to bet a lot of these primetime games over the total. No real surprise in the modern day NFL if that's the case.
No, absolutely not. And you're looking at totals now that are averaging about 48. So this one's interesting, though, just because it's Arrowhead Stadium. It's always trended towards the unders, but certainly Kansas City's a different team this year with that dynamic offense and a lackluster defense. Cincinnati, the same thing. You know, here's the other interesting element to this, just looking at power numbers. And looking at a lot of the metrics and a lot of the debates, databases and models, like there aren't models right now that are constantly just going to show games in the low 60s. Like there was an instance in the playoffs with Atlanta and Green Bay a few years back where like a model spit out its largest number ever at like 61.5. But you're just not going to see that. And because of that, you're still going to get professional bettors like we're seeing now, right? This total for Sunday Night Football that Dave was talking about was 58.5. We're now looking at 57.5 in the sharper shop. Now, I'm not going to be one of those guys to go under. But just knowing these models, like they're not spitting out numbers this high yet at this point.
No, it's a level of sophistication and a change in the pace of play, the tempo, the big play potential, explosiveness, everything else. So it's going to be interesting to see ultimately when the market catches up. And books can hang large enough numbers, but as you mentioned and Dave did as well, as long as they get professional money coming in on the under when they inflate these numbers, even if it offsets a fraction of the recreational bettors, that's going to be how they kind of approach it. Tonight's game, however, Payne, doesn't have nearly as lofty a total to try and go over. It is the Broncos on the road in the desert taking on the Arizona Cardinals. And we can call it the game of the week or whatever the hell else you want to try and call it, with Denver a 1.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 42. I mean, I guess I start with this. Which coach do you trust less not to piss all over himself here?
I mean, I know it's a Thursday night game and everyone's itching for action, but you know, I can tell you this. I might watch this on replay. I might
run a two-minute drill in handicapping this game. So, I mean, we got about 120 seconds to get through it.
I think that's smart. Like, I might attempt to get out of the cave tonight, go see a movie, and I don't think I'm watching this one. The one thing that's interesting here for me is one of the largest home-road dichotomies in the entire NFL is with the Arizona Cardinals. Home-away splits are drastic. One of the larger early season home road dichotomies in the NFL is the Denver Broncos because of the altitude in the first couple weeks of the season, the new CBA, guys not being in shape, and those are the only two games they won. They were in great spots, and they combined to win those two games by 4 points. This could legitimately be an 0-6 football team. One of the more respected groups bought to three, did take three in the bye. The over was also hit here, and that's because from what I'm hearing, the Broncos are going to be more aggressive defensively. They're going to load the box to stop the run after being gashed the last 2 weeks, and I think that should leave their secondary exposed a little bit on the back end, playing single high safety. Let's see if Rosen at home can take advantage of that. I know Christian Kirk's emerged nicely the last 2 weeks, hit a deep bomb there in the San Francisco game. On the other side, the other reason this total's going up, I'm hearing a more aggressive game plan from Denver. It would appear with his job on the line, Vance is going to allow Bill Musgrave to take a couple shots down the field. You would hope that approach happens from possibly the jump because we've seen Vance wants to go ground and pound early. Denver gets behind. Then the second half, he allows Musgrave to chuck and things start to go a little bit better. And that's what we saw again last week. You know, Rams, McVay, that potent passing game, it was actually Denver that outgained the Rams by 1.6 yards per play through the air. 49% of Denver's passes graded successful. They hit 5 explosive passes. So Denver's pass game, I think, is a little bit better than we expect. Now, you know, I think Vance may lose the battle here. He may surrender and go a little more pass heavy. When you look at Arizona, though, defensively, you can run on them a little bit. Gave up, you know, 150 plus yards to Latavius Murray. They give up explosive runs. They don't give up explosive passes. This might be the game where Vance would maybe want to employ his ground game and then give Case Keenum some play action off of that. We'll see, though. But I'm hearing it's a more aggressive approach for the Broncos offense as well.
That would be the most Denver and Vance Joseph thing ever if they decide this is the week where they can run against the 31st ranked run defense and they decide to throw it 50 times instead of running the football. Whereas everybody else they play against, they try and run the football into, you know, 9-10 men boxes and don't let Case Keenum spread it around to an underrated core of receivers. But what a weird game tonight, and two teams trying to figure out their identity, two head coaches who can't seem to get out of their own way. Mike McCoy under the gun in Arizona, I'm sure he would love nothing more than to see Josh Rosen have his signature performance in his still very fresh rookie season against the team that let him go in the middle of Vance Joseph's first campaign.
I don't know why he would be under the gun. Like, I just, listen, there's not a ton of talent offensively. The offensive line's been banged up a little bit, not as good as initially expected. Your head coach wanted to employ a style of ground and pound, which again, 2018, not always the best approach. You started initially Mr. Dink and Dunk, Sam Bradford. Now you've gone to a rookie quarterback. He doesn't have a ton of weapons. Larry Fitzgerald's been banged up. Christian Kirk, rookie receiver, they have a tough time getting acclimated. There's just not a lot of offensive weapons here. Like, I don't know what you would have expected. If you have any concerns, it's an Arizona defense that's been really, really good the last 2 years and how they've downgraded. You're a defensive coach. You brought in, you know, defensive guys with you from Carolina. Why is your defense so poor? So those are the things I would be looking at if I was Arizona, not necessarily what's going on offense.
Steve Wilkes can't fire himself, Payne. That's part of the reason. You got to point the finger somewhere.
That is true. That's a good point. You corporate guys are tough.
You know what? We've already spent way too much time on this Broncos and Cardinals game. So thank you, the NFL, for giving this this lovely gem on Thursday Night Football. But whatever way you choose to go in it, our loyal listeners, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Payne, before we close up shop here on the NFL Week 7 edition of the Bet the Board podcast, we have to identify our best investment. And full disclosure here, there was heated debate between the two of us in terms of what direction we were going to go. The floor is yours for the executive decision.
I don't know how heated it was. I thought it was pretty friendly.
No, I mean, well, heated by our standards. Normally, okay, we share a same vision. It's not like, you know, there was name-calling, insulting of families, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I would certainly not insult your family, especially the one that's new to brew, since it's my kind of family, the Italian family. what we're looking at here is, and certainly no one's going to like this, but I just think the spot is very good here. I think the number is off. I think we're going to see a Chicago team that this is a huge swing game for them. I really believe that. I think we're going to see a team that was embarrassed bounce back a little bit this week and show some effort. We're looking at a New England team off a big win. They have not performed well away from home, 0-2 in that regard. And I would think Chicago's probably the best team that they have faced on the road. I like the Matt Nagy element here, knowing how to attack New England's defense a little bit. Let's just hope Mitch Trubisky doesn't throw up on himself.
It's a big ask.
I would love to get 3.5 here. There is some out there. It's trending that way. I certainly wouldn't endorse a buy with a total this high. I still think 3 is good, but if you can get 3.5, obviously, I would look towards that. So I think the Bears bounce back here. What is your number? And just so we can paint this picture that we're both semi on the same page, I know no one wants to fade Tom Brady, and it hasn't been a recipe for success long term. But when you look at your number here, what is it, truthfully?
And I know number, you don't. Spot adjusted and everything else that I build into it before I ultimately arrive at my decisions, I make the Patriots a little more than a 1-point favorite, so like 1.1.
Okay. And that's where we're at right now. We make this game New England minus a half. So there's just, I think there's just way too much value in a good spot to not have a little money invested here on the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's definitely one of those things that you look for this late in the year to try and find that kind of line variance with a defense that's more than capable. And as you mentioned, for all those listeners that are out here this way in the desert, you should be able to find +3.5, -20 relatively easily. We'll see if the offshore market allows for that as you get closer in. Oh, here we go, telling me I live in fantasy camp because I have access to better numbers than you do in South Beach. There are plenty of football games where you text me the day of and you tell me you're able to take 6 when the rest of the world's 4, even if it's for lower limits. So I'm not going to play my violin for you here.
I am able to get some numbers out your way, too. I am just simply pointing out that it's much tougher to beat the offshore market than it is in La La Land out there.
You have your tentacles all over this fine landscape, whether it's New Jersey, whether it's Mississippi, whether it's the islands, whether it's Nevada. We know that you're connected all over this fine planet.
Let's go with the Bears. Let's bring it home. Be a team player.
I'm a team player. It's not like I root against anything that we give out on this podcast. We haven't gotten to that point where we go, oh, the hell with this. I'm rooting against our best bet.
You can bust my balls come Monday if it loses. You can throw some
egg in my
face.
And I'll shower you with praises when it wins by 3 touchdowns.
I don't need that either. Let's just get the W for everybody.
So I can't use like the celebrate emoji like when I send you a text message?
Oh, via text. Yeah, I just don't know how anyone's going to see that via podcast.
Well, yeah, I don't think I was going to create a video rendition for it and try and send it all on through social media.
Okay. I mean, so you can shower me with mean text as the game's going on.
No, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not that kind of guy. We're all in this together. We win together. We lose together. And that's the mantra here at the Bet the Board podcast.
Full disclosure, this card I thought was going to be very good is a little weird this week.
Yeah, I soured on it.
I love a lot.
I soured on it pretty quick as I dug into some of these games.
Yeah. And you know, here we are with the Bears. Again, I do like them. I think the number's way off. I think it's a good spot. So,
all right, Chicago, bring home the Bears. Do us the right way. Get us to the window as 3.5-point underdogs. All right, Payne, before we close up shop on the week 7, we got any other other
that's
nuggets?
A slogan. Yes, the nugget is we might need another new shirt now. Do us the right way.
do us the I mean, we may have to put it out there for a vote and try and figure out what slogan for like a special limited edition holiday shirt since we've sold that. Or, I mean, I think we have a handful of shirts left for the 2018 traditional Bet the Board attire. But, you know, might need a holiday edition, some different colors, you know, a little blue and yellow for the celebrators of the Festival of Lights, a little green and red for the other contingent out there that you're a part of. Mix it all up. Give people what they want.
Do us the right way with the Festivus poll.
I mean, Festivus for the rest of us here on Bet the Board Podcast. All right,
let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, we've rambled enough. We both have, in theory, things to do today. So it's the Chicago Bears, your best bet. Special thanks to Dave Mason. He joins us every Wednesday and Thursday throughout the football season. You can follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. You can follow Payne Insider, at Payne Insider. And lastly, if you're entered into the 5K football free roll, use a Twitter handle. We hate to see your prize go to somebody else if you're going to go 5-0 and win the tiebreakers. Best of luck with all of your investments this weekend, and we'll see you at the window.